For April 12, 2019, this is the Best of the Rain Report, a weekly hamcast Tap Poly KC9RP produced for 29 years beginning in 1990. One of the notables Hap occasionally featured in the mid to late 90s was Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, special counsel with the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. In fact, for a few years in the late 1990s, Riley voiced a weekly posting produced by RAIN founder Hap Poly KC9RP called the FCC Enforcement Log with Riley Hollingsworth. Unfortunately, the RAIN archives don't include any of Riley's weekly enforcement logs. In 1999, Riley made a presentation at the Dayton Hamvention during the FCC Forum. That talk was aired as a RAIN report in 2000. Here it is voiced by this most non-bureaucratic FCC bureaucrat.
I worked in amateur enforcement for a few years, and then we switched over into land mobile and commercial enforcement. And because, as you know, then there was a big explosion in the paging and cellular services, which I'll get to later on. So although amateur radio service is not a high-dollar, high-profile service, as the land mobile and microwave services are, it's very important to me personally because of my own background. I was licensed as an amateur 39 years ago, and I take the assignment very seriously because I don't know whether you realize it or not, but amateur radio is an American institution. Our hobby in this public service is a great American tradition. You know, it's in vogue now to talk about volunteerism, but volunteerism has been the main underpinning of amateur radio for 50 years. So we were in vogue a long time before we even knew it. And in what other hobby can you have so much fun and do so much public service at the same time? I don't think you'll find that anywhere. When I was 13 years old, my dad bought me a breadboard shortwave radio. We brought it home and built it, and one of the first conversations I heard on it was amateur conversations. And from that moment on, I was hooked. I knew that my life would never quite be the same again. And I'm standing here before you today because of those few minutes of conversation of listening to ham operators. And growing up in the Carolinas, even people that didn't know much about radio, everybody in town knew a Grady Horton, Al Norris, Morris Hall, Joe Abernathy. Maybe some of you people knew these people, Dr. Patton or Joe Galt. And they knew that when hurricanes came up the coast of the Carolinas or when tornadoes came over the mountains, that it was the ham operators that could find out what was going on. They knew that if they had a son or a daughter in the service, or if their church had a missionary base somewhere, it was the ham operators that could and usually did get the messages through. One of my greatest thrills as a 14-year-old was handling a phone patch between a missionary in the Andes and their parents in New York. And the family cried when I got the missionary on the line. I never forgot that summer morning in South Carolina, when I was able to do that with a simple wire antenna stretched out across the backyard. That antenna was put up by ham operators who wanted to bring another person into their ranks and change his life just like their life had been changed. Now, the credit for the change in course in amateur radio enforcement goes to a couple of parties, but the main one is the League, because the commission had neglected, not deliberately, but the commission had neglected amateur enforcement since the agreement with the League Auxiliary and so forth. In the early 80s, as I mentioned, there was an explosion in the commercial services. Cellular, paging, specialized mobile radio, all of this all of a sudden became a multi-billion dollar industry, and there wasn't much Japanese invasion in it. And so at the same time, the commission went through cutbacks, budget cutbacks, and personnel cutbacks. And we had a couple of chairmen that could not do enforcement. We had one chairman, the previous chairman, Reed Hunt, who directed the bureaus not to do amateur enforcement. So although the bureaus wanted to do it, and the specialists out there, a lot of whom are ham operators, they wanted to do it, but we were directed not to. The League wrote a letter, and I found out later as I was going through some of their old files down there, I found out just how many letters the League had written and how long they had tried to get the commission to do something about this. But this last time, this last letter in the fall apparently worked. They sent a letter to the chairman criticizing one of the bureaus' handling of the Tony Barbin case up in New York. And I don't know if you're familiar with that case, but Tony Barbin had been on a 15-month suspension for maliciously interfering and jamming with repeater operations. Near the end of the suspension, there was a lot of evidence coming in, both from amateurs and from the field offices, that he was on again, back doing the same thing. And the league felt that they had submitted ample evidence through the auxiliary and other sources for some action to be taken against Barb, and for whatever reason, it never was. But you can thank the Tony Barbin case, although it wasn't handled correctly. It was a catalyst, and the letter that the league wrote was a catalyst for bringing this to the commission's attention, because it came in just after the new, we used to call it FOB, as you know now, it's CIB, Compliance and Information Bureau chief, came on. He's an ex-Marine. He saw the letter. It was forwarded to him. I happened to be down there on the day that it came in, and he said, "What's this all about?" So I gave him a background of amateur enforcement and commercial land mobile enforcement and so forth. And Rich Lee, being an ex-Marine, can't stand it if nothing's being done on some front. He likes activity on all fronts, preferably at the same time. And I go down every Monday to spend the day with those guys, and he likes to see maps and pins, and he looks at it as if it were a Normandy invasion. And that's exactly what it has to be, because it was so sadly neglected for so long, for various circumstances. It has to be that. The same afternoon that he got that letter, he went to the chairman and asked that if he were able to work out an agreement with the Wireless Bureau, would it be okay if CIB took over amateur enforcement? So the chairman agreed to it, and the next day there was a meeting with the wireless staff. And within a couple of weeks, we had reached an agreement with the Bureau. We opened a special telephone line. And after the first 300 or 400 telephone calls, it became apparent that most of the problems related to malicious interference and jamming on a few of the HF bands. And when you took out the repeater complaints, and when you took out complaints about Richard Burton in California on that repeater, something like 60 or 70% of the complaints revolved around the same 10 to 20 operators in the country. So at that point, we knew that it was by no means hopeless. Had the complaints come in and been scattered all across the board and so many problems on so many bands and so many areas, it would have looked hopeless and it would have looked too expensive to take on any type of enforcement. But this showed that although it had been neglected and it needed some work, that basically the service was still very much alive and healthy. Maybe the manners and courtesy and other things had deteriorated. But I knew from the commercial services that the percentage of violations that you would expect in the amateur service was way low, because we probably have as much unlicensed or more unlicensed operation in some of the commercial services as we do in amateur. We decided to take action on all fronts that we could, and some people had been making complaints for years, and some of the operators that were being complained against, we realized, were out there trying to do their own type of enforcement. And so we didn't want to take a broad sweep. This would have been the easiest way to do it, to take a broad sweep with revocation hearings and put 15 to 20, maybe 40 licenses in jeopardy. We didn't want to do that because in talking to some of these people, a lot of them were longtime operators who were out there because the FCC wasn't. And they thought in their mind that they were doing self-policing in the amateur bands. And so we've gotten a lot of those people to back off and let us come in and do the work. We've sent out about 150 warning letters. And we found that in 75 to 80% of those cases, the problem went away. And I noticed it always goes away, especially in the case where the person that gets the warning letter calls up and just vigorously contends that he had nothing to do with it, calls you every name in the book. But I noticed that the problem stops. We're gradually, as you can tell, gradually focusing on the worst offenders. And just as an aside here, the best way to keep up with what we're doing is in the league publication, the Rain Report, Bill Pasternak's work, and we don't use standard public notices and news items because we found that they are just not read by that many people outside of the commercial interest. So we decided to go to the very areas, to the very forums, where most of the amateur radio operators deal. And so that's the best way to keep up with it.
In this edition of The Best of Rain, we're featuring FCC Special Counsel Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, who always drew a large audience when he spoke at the Dayton Hamvention when he represented the FCC in the FCC forums. We'll conclude his talk in a moment. This is The Best of Rain. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back. This is The Rain Report.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
And now I want to get back to the main point. Hams need to realize, and you've got to preach to your peers, that the number of HF transmitters are declining, but the demand for HF spectrum is increasing. It's an all-time high, especially among international broadcasting stations. And I think that too many in our service take the allocations for granted. We have vast privileges. We have incomparable privileges over a vast array of frequencies. And, you know, some experts, and I've heard this for years, experts say, or at least some of them, that there's not really any use for HF, that there's not really any use for 75 meters or 160 meters, that if anybody ever uses that or keeps using it, it's going to be the amateur operators. Well, they also said that about 38 gigahertz and 900 megahertz and meteor shower communications. They said it about spread spectrum, 220 and 800 megahertz. Some of the third world countries would love to have 75 meters as a national telephone system. Always it would be cheaper for them to establish some system like this than it would be to have contractors come in and charge tens of millions of dollars to set up a standard telephone system for them. And so when the experts say that the amateur radio frequencies are safe, that's when I really got nervous, because over the years I've collected quotations by experts, and I want to read some of those. And if you have any sense of confidence from the prediction by experts that amateur radio frequencies are safe, let me read you these quotes by even more famous experts. I think there's a world market for about half a dozen computers. That was Chairman Watson of IBM in 1943. He was a great expert. There's no reason for an individual to have or even want a computer in their house. That was the president of digital equipment in 1977. For God's sake, go down in the lobby and get rid of a lunatic who's down there saying he's got a machine for seeing pictures by wireless. And be careful, he's probably dangerous. That was the chief newspaper editor of the London Observer, and he was talking about John Baird, who was down in the lobby wanting to see him. John Baird was one of the inventors of television. This one, video won't be able to hold on to any market it captures after about the first 6 months. People will soon get tired of staring into a plywood box every night. That was Daryl Zanuck. He was head of 20th Century Fox Studios. Nuclear-powered vacuum cleaners will be a reality in 10 years. That was Albert Lute, president of Lute Vacuum Cleaner Corporation in 1955. And I won't name this expert, but he said, it looks like Republican presidents as far as the eye can see. That was in 1991. And this next one is one of my favorite because, as all the FCC people who are here today know, we used to occasionally get these memos. You'd get a call or a directive from headquarters that would say, you need to figure out how we can make cuts and save $2 million over the next fiscal year and let us know by close of business tomorrow. Well, in the first place, if I knew that and could think of it so fast and hadn't told them already, I'd be derelict. But in second place, you just can't think of anything that makes sense like that. So in licensing, we suddenly came up with the idea every time they would call, raise fees. I mean, you have these people getting to be millionaires from $35 business licenses, so we said raise fees. Well, that didn't work. They want cutbacks. They want dramatic ideas. And I know that this guy, he was chief of the patent office. I know that he must have gotten a memo like that. He sent a memo to President Cleveland in 1895. This is the chief of the patent office now. All important machines and devices that need to be invented have now been invented. So the patent office is an unnecessary drain on the federal budget and should be closed down. I know exactly what that guy was going through when he wrote that. You know, these predictions, we always heard, who would want 38 gigahertz? And I remember in Gettysburg when an application would come in or a batch of applications would come in about 38 gigahertz, it was almost a laughing matter. We would think, well, somebody's got a lot of time on their hands. But look at it now. Look at the spectrum now. American hams in foreign countries will tell you the criticism and the ridicule they hear regarding American hams and what they say on the bands. And it's often an international embarrassment. The FCC is trying to, and our government is trying to expand amateur allocations, and we're trying to get some of the foreign broadcasters out of 40 meters. And it's some kind of an embarrassment to go to these International Telecommunications Union where the other countries have one vote just like us, and a lot of them don't like Americans anyway. They play back for us what they hear on the ham bands on 75 meters and on 20 meters. So these people that are out there doing this, they may not realize, or maybe they do, that they're heard all around the world. And radio has the capability of being, of enabling you to be an ambassador around the world. It can do just as much damage if it's used in the wrong way. And it's especially very often a personal embarrassment if you're trying to demonstrate it to a young person or somebody that you want to bring into the service. And we know today that young people have many more things competing for their time than we did growing up, good and bad, whether it's video, internet, Game Boys, everything else. And we also know that any big service like this, if you don't have a new influx of members and people using it, it's going to get stagnant. And to the extent it were to get stagnant, to that extent you raise the eyebrows of the commercial interest who would think nothing of paying $1 billion for some parts of the spectrum. And I would suggest to all amateurs to read over the basis and purpose of amateur radio and the rules, Part 97 there, and you realize what a high price is being bid for spectrum. And think about this. Always think about how we can justify keeping it. All too often what I hear on the bands today, and we do a lot of monitoring, is very childish and is stupid. And 20 years ago, we'd call that CB. And you do hear a lot of it on the amateur bands now. I was at the first FCC auction at the Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. And they had three experts there from private industry that had been meeting for weeks to make a rough prediction over the amount of the first bid and what it would be, because there's as many different ways of doing radio auctions as there is Baskin-Robbins ice cream. There's closed auctions, there's a Dutch way, and just dozens of ways. But it's very important to know what the first bids are going to be so you can decide what the increment will be on the next round or what the cutoff point will be and so forth. These guys predicted, after a lot of study, a lot of meetings with economists and engineers and communications experts, they predicted that the first bid would come in at $2 million. And the first bid came in at $20 million. And from that point on, the radio world's never been the same. But remember a few minutes ago when I mentioned that running a phone patch to a party in South America and the neighborhood hams who had helped me get an antenna set up and get on the air and people that had changed my life? That's what amateur radio is about. But I want to challenge every one of you that are here to help recruit one new licensee into the ranks or to help one person upgrade. And as I was reminded by the league, and I see Rosalie White standing back here, and it's a very good message, Rosalie, because what you told me has been verified time after time in my talks to these groups. Don't forget about young girls, teenage girls and pre-teenage girls. The league has found that they have an insatiable need for communication. They're fascinated with things like this, and it's also letting them know, and all of society is looking for ways to show this, it's letting them know in what ways they'll have a technical ability. Every ham in America has a decision to make, and life is short, especially the technological life of things. You have a decision to make, and that is, are you going to be part of the problem, or are you going to be part of the solution?
And that concludes our excerpt from the 1999 Dayton Hamvention presentation by Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH. Riley retired from the FCC in 2008. He was the classiest FCC bureaucrat to speak at the Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum. The Wayback Machine has some of Riley's FCC enforcement logs, but unfortunately, they're in antiquated real audio. The Best of Rain updates Saturday on therainreport.com and on WTWW shortwave from Lebanon, Tennessee on 5085 kHz. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming!